Hello and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we take a critical look at some of the leadership and management issues which have made the news outlets in the last few days. My name's Nick Scott, an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and in this podcast we'll be exploring events up to the 3rd of February 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
The now almost traditional group brainstorm session used to fire up innovation was the subject of critical scrutiny in a recent article on website Inc.com, which highlighted findings from the latest Ideas report. A survey conducted by tech company WeTransfer found that while working together is beneficial in taking an idea forward, most respondents felt that they themselves were best placed to generate and evaluate new ideas, with less than one in five asking friends or colleagues if an idea was any good or not. Report author Rob Anderson argued that brainstorming sessions and other creative meetings may well be a waste of time, advocating that giving individuals the time and space to think alone would improve the quality of their ideas. So, Kate, do these findings signal a need amongst leaders and managers to reevaluate the impact of collaboration on creativity?
I've always been a bit suspicious of the brainstorming session, as though by putting people in a room all together at the same time, you can miraculously generate solutions and ideas that you wouldn't get in any other way. We don't know where our ideas come from often. We don't understand the power of the subconscious. So it's undoubtedly the case that being on our own, different places, different environments, we will get ideas, and they cannot really be generated to order. So more time to think, more opportunities to be in different environments indeed. But getting together with an embryonic idea, a sort of idea, actually can be hugely improved by speaking to colleagues, by sharing, reinventing exactly what it is. And what's interesting here is seems to be an emphasis on people wanting to own the idea. That's my idea. When in my experience, the best innovations, the best ideas might have been sparked by an individual, but what you actually end up with is honestly co-created by everybody who's been interested and had an input.
The British commitment to the traditional cup of tea was called into question this week when it was announced that Unilever are considering putting up for sale their best-known tea brand, PG Tips. Unilever established themselves as top tea purveyors over 30 years ago with the acquisition of both Lipton and Brookbond. However, in the last decade, they have unsuccessfully tried to ignite growth in falling sales of what is known in the trade as black tea. Sales of this traditional tea, especially tea bags, have declined, while flavoured teas, fruit teas, green teas, and of course coffee, has seen various degrees of growth in the market. Despite annual sales of 3 billion euros and 100 million cups a day in the UK alone, Unilever chief exec Alan Jope said that they would review their tea portfolio with a view to outright sale, part ownership, or a revised structure, having finally accepted that they cannot achieve growth in this traditional market. So, Kate, is this just good business sense?
Any student of Marketing 101 will have been introduced to the product life cycle. That suggestion, or observation really, that products eventually die. Sometimes you can revitalise that product by nostalgia. And I think this is perhaps what we'd be grappling with here. So many products evoke so many emotions, especially in the UK. Memories of drinking tea will be very strong, as Jope says, particularly amongst older people. And it's unlikely, if the decision to divest the tea part of the business can only be made rationally, there will be strong emotional reasons that people are trying to argue to keep it. But business-wise, products do diminish in popularity and therefore in profit and have to be let go of. And however you might try to revitalize a product, as has been seen here, some products really don't lend themselves to it.
Forbes.com reports that Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon announced this week that from July the 1st, the investment bank will only take companies public if they have at least one diverse board member, with an initial focus on women. Speaking from the World Economic Forum in Davos, Solomon spoke to the benefit of having diverse perspectives on Goldman Sachs' own board of directors, where 4 of the 11 board members are women. He also stated that over the last 4 years, Goldman's newly public companies with a woman on the board had significantly outperformed those that didn't have a woman on the board. So, Kate, same question again, really. Isn't this just good business sense?
It most certainly is, and there's so much data and research to support that companies perform better when they have more diverse boards. But that's still strong business case doesn't seem to be gaining sufficient traction. And I think too often we're called to look at the moral case. And I don't think that's really going to work. Too often we're encouraged to have more diversity at a board level, more as a moral crusade than just sound business sense. So I think if we can just talk about that, focus on the results, focus on the performance, really make the evidence for this forefront and foremost in whenever we talk about it, it becomes less of doing good and much more about a sensible business approach. And again, rather like the tea, emotions interfere with this. People's experiences, people's understanding, their own view of gendered relationships. And as Aviva Wittenberg-Cox says, what we really want in organisations is gender balance.
Economist Paul Oyer, writing for think tank IZA World Labour, notes the development of the gig economy involved a combination of rising employment costs at the same time as technological change facilitated short-term labour contracts, resulting in the steady growth in the numbers of people holding non-traditional jobs. This benefited both the firm, which needed less than a full-time person, and the worker who placed a high value on flexibility. The report notes that one challenge in regulating this growing gig economy is the diversity of attributes amongst the workers: age, income, education, and personal preference. And as a result, crafting regulations to treat such a diverse profile is likely to be economically inefficient. Given the statutory entitlements that follow, the most contentious regulatory question in the gig economy is whether to classify independent workers as employees. Oyer concludes that as the gig economy continues to develop, some policy changes are likely to be necessary to give these independent workers some protection from exploitation and the portability of benefits. So, Kate, should the gig economy be closely regulated, as this report suggests, or does its very vitality stem from its absence of regulation?
Complexity isn't really an excuse, is it, for allowing exploitation? And as with any employer, whether you're employing gig workers or you're recruiting people on a more permanent basis, you can treat them well or you can try to take advantage of them. And your reputation as an employer will determine the breadth and depth of your talent pool, and that is undoubtedly the case. So those people who treat their gig workers well, which is understanding the difficulty of being a gig worker, rewarding them in a way that's appropriate, that reflects the fact that there are no pensions, no holiday pay, no sick pay, etc., will get the best gig workers. It's undoubtedly so. Whereas those employers who see this as a way of avoiding national insurance contributions, the administration of tax, they will not get the best people. But yes, we do need regulation because it is so easy for the lower paid to be exploited, and that is where the protections should be.
Well, thanks very much, Kate. That's all we have time for today. Do please subscribe to this podcast series and go to the News and Views section of the website for more topical material on www.instituteLM.com.